This is disc number 14.
Death brings no great punishment, only the reward of the afterlife if you have served the Creator in this one. You three, however, will be denied the Creator's light. What use is that to me? But if a person is alive, I can make them suffer. He leaned closer. Don't you agree? Yes, Excellency, Sister Ulysia managed to say in a strangled voice as blood began to trickle from her ear. I liked parts of your plan, he said as he straightened. I find them very useful for my own purpose. Things such as the boxes of Warden. Why should I kill Richard Rawl? I have the opportunity to do so much more than simply kill him. I want him to be alive to endure inconceivable suffering. By letting him live that day at his camp, the same as you did when you ignited your chainfire spell, I knew that I would be able to use this new opportunity to take everything from him. Since I was in your minds, I too was protected from the chainfire spell, the same as you. Now, with everything you have given me, I can strip Richard Rawl of his power, his land, his people, his friends, his loved ones. I can take everything from him in the name of the Fellowship of Order. Jagang drew his hand into a tight fist before him as he gritted his teeth. For opposing our rightful cause, I intend to crush him down to his soul. And then, when I have wrung everything out of him, given him every kind of pain there is in this world, I will extinguish the flame of that soul. And you have made it all possible. Sister Ulysia nodded tearfully at all that was lost to her. She seemed resigned to her new duty. Excellency, we can accomplish none of it without the book we came here for. Jagang lifted a volume off the table and held it up for them to see. The Book of Counted Shadows. The book you came here to find. I thought to search for it while I waited for you to complete your journey here. He tossed the book back on the table. An exceedingly rare book. This, of course, is one of the few copies that were never supposed to be made, and so it was hidden in this place. Of course I was there in your mind when you found all of this out. You even brought me the means of verification. His unsettling gaze moved to Kaelin. And you have a collar around her neck by which I can control her. He turned a condescending smile on Sister Ulysia. You see, since I'm in your mind, I have but to command it. And through you, I control her every move, just as easily as you do. Kaelin's hope for a chance to escape evaporated. If the sisters were cruel masters, this man was something far worse. Kaelin didn't yet know what his intentions were, but she held no illusions that they were anything but vile. An inkling of something else began to well up in her. For some reason she was of value to the sisters, and now just as valuable to Jagang. How could she be the means of verification of some ancient book hidden away for thousands of years? She had always been told that she was a nobody, a slave, and nothing more. She was beginning to understand that the sisters had been lying to her. They only wanted her to think she was a nobody. It appeared instead that she was, somehow, pivotally important to all of them. Jagang flicked a hand at Jillian. Besides the collar, I have her to help me convince Kaelin here to do as she is told. Tell me, my dear, have you ever been with a man? Jillian pushed up against Kaelin. You said you would free my grandfather. You said that if I did exactly as you said, and brought the sisters here, you would set him and the others free. I did what you told me to do.
Yes, you did. And you really were quite convincing. I was there in their minds the whole time watching your performance. You followed my instructions flawlessly. His voice turned as threatening as his glare. Now answer the question, or your grandfather and the others will be vulture food by morning. Have you ever been with a man?
I'm not sure what you mean, she said in a small voice.
I see. Well, if Kaelin doesn't do everything I tell her to do, you will be given over to my soldiers for their amusement. They like getting their hands on young things like you who haven't before experienced desires such as theirs.
Jillian's fingers tightened on Kaylin's shirt. She pressed her face against Kaylin's arm as she stifled a sob. Kaylin squeezed the girl's shoulder, trying to comfort her, trying to let her know that she wouldn't let anything bad happen to her if she could help it. "You have me," Kaylin said. "Leave her be." "Tovey has the third box," Sister Ulysia said. It was clear to Kaylin that she was trying to stall, to buy time, as well as ingratiate herself with Jagang. He glared at her. "It was stolen from her."
"Stolen? Well, I can help you find it."
Jagang leaned his backside on the table as he folded his massive arms.
"Ulysia, when are you going to learn that not only do I stand in front of you, but I am in your mind as well? I know everything you're thinking. But do keep coming up with your schemes. They're quite inventive. And did you ever conceive some grand plans?" he said with a satisfied sigh as he strolled closer. "You got farther with them than I thought you would ever be able to."
His voice took on an edge that ran shivers up Kaylin's spine.
"And look at what my patience has netted me," he said as he turned to her, fixing her in the gaze of his terrible, inky eyes. "You wanted to know why I let you wander around free, doing as you wished? Here is the answer. Letting you cast about on your own, Ulysia, has netted me the prize of prizes."
Kaylin knew now that she had been correct. She was, for some reason, valuable. She wished she knew why. She wished she knew who she really was. Kaylin could do nothing but watch as Jagang closed the distance to her. There was nowhere to run. Just in case she might have thought that, though, she felt a shock of pain blaze down her spine and burn through her legs, locking them in place. She knew it was the collar causing the painful paralysis, because the sisters had done that very thing before. He, of course, would know that, because he had been in their minds all along to see it done. She could see in his merciless expression that this time, he was the cause of the pain. Jagang reached out and ran his thick fingers through Kaylin's hair. She didn't want him touching her, but she could do nothing to prevent it. He seemed to forget everyone else in the room as he stared at her.
"Yes, Ulysia, you surely did bring me the prize of prizes. You brought me Kaylin Amnell."
Amnell. So now she knew her last name. She had detected the slightest hesitation after her name, almost as if a title should have been added to it. Jagang leaned close with an obscene smile that carried meaning she didn't want to consider. Kaylin stood her ground by her own will, even if she had no real choice. Jagang's powerful, muscled body pressed up against her. It was like feeling the weight of a bull leaning against her. With one finger, the man lifted her hair away from her neck. His stubble scraped her cheek as he put his mouth by her ear.
"But Kaylin doesn't know who she is, doesn't even know the true nature of the prize that she truly is."
For the first time, Kaylin wished that she were invisible, that this man could not see her just as everyone but the sisters and Jillian could not see her. This was not a man she wanted to recognize her. This was a man she didn't want anywhere near her.
"You cannot begin to imagine," he whispered intimately in a voice that seared her with hot dread, "just how extraordinarily unpleasant this is going to be for you. You were worth my patience, worth everything I've had to put up with from Ulysia. We're going to become quite close, you and I. If you think I intend the worst for Lord Rahl, then you cannot even begin to imagine what I have in mind for you, darling."
Kaylin had never felt so alone, so helpless in her life. Against her will, she felt a tear run down her cheek, even as she managed to hold back a sob deep in her throat. Chapter 38. Once Jigang turned away and was no longer looking at her, Kaelin at last allowed herself to swallow with silent relief to have his hands off of her, even if he had only touched her hair. Helpless dread shivered through her at him having been that close to her. She fully understood the meaningful look he had given her. She knew that he could do anything he wanted to her, and she was completely at his mercy. No, there was still breath in her lungs. She couldn't give in to such a belief. She couldn't allow herself to think she was helpless. She had to think, instead of simply surrendering to panic. Panic could not help her accomplish anything. Maybe it would turn out to be true that she had no control of her own life. But she knew that she was lost to his will if she resigned herself to the blind guidance of panic. That's what he wanted her to do. Across the room at the heavy table, Jigang pulled the book closer. He opened the front cover, and then leaned on both hands as he silently peered down at it. The rounded brawn of his broad shoulders, heavily muscled back and thick neck, looked more like that of a bull than a man. The things he wore only served to enhance his less-than-human appearance. He and his men appeared to deliberately shun the mantle of the noblest ideals of mankind, and instead embraced a base animalistic aspect. The aspiration toward the lower form of existence, rather than a higher one, revealed an elemental dimension of the overt threat these men represented. They aspired to be not men, but something less. Back not far in front of the doors, the two huge guards stood silently with their feet spread and their hands clasped behind their backs. Kaelin rested a hand on Jillian's shoulder when the girl looked up in silent anxiety at being in the presence of such men, who from time to time cast dark glances her way. The two guards didn't see Kaelin. At least, she didn't think they did. She had minded their behavior and noticed that from time to time, besides Jillian, they eyed the sisters, but without much interest. When Jigang spoke to Kaelin, the guards looked a bit confused. They said nothing, but Kaelin knew that to them it must have appeared that their leader was talking to himself. Like everyone but Jillian, the sisters, and Jigang through his link to the sisters, the guards forgot Kaelin before they knew they had seen her. She wished she could be just as invisible to their leader. "What of your army, Excellency?" Sister Ulysia asked, still plainly trying to buy time by engaging him in conversation. She, too, was trying not to give in to panic. Jigang looked over his shoulder with a wicked grin. "They are close." Bewildered, Sister Ulysia blinked. "Close?" He nodded, still grinning. "Just over the horizon to the north, up into Hara." "The north? Into Dahara?" Sister Amina blurted out. "But that's not possible, Excellency." He lifted an eyebrow, clearly enjoying their surprise. "They must be wrong in their reports about their location," Sister Amina said, sounding like she was grasping at an opportunity to ingratiate herself with the Emperor. She licked her lips. "What I mean, Excellency, is that we passed them long ago. They were still back up in the Midlands, still on their way south to get around the intervening mountains. They could not possibly have gotten—" Her quavering words dwindled to nothing, as if looking upon Jigang drained her of all courage, even the courage to speak, until she was left a silent shell of dread. "Oh, but they have already rounded the mountains down here and turned north up into Dahara," Jigang said. "You see, I influenced your minds to direct you to go where I wanted you to go, when I wanted you to go there. It was my aim to have you think you were safe, to think you knew where I was. You never even heard my whispers, but those whispers still guided you without you even being aware of it." "But we saw your troops," Sister Cecilia said. "We saw them and went around them. We left them far behind." "You saw what I wanted you to see," Jigang said with a dismissive gesture. "You thought you were going where you wanted, but you were in fact going where I guided you. Right to me and my main force.
I sent you past a number of rear guard divisions and then some units going south to other areas in the Midlands. I was making you believe what I wanted you to believe, seeing to it that you all felt confident in your plans. Well, I saw to it that the main army proceeded with my plans. Our forces have made it a great deal farther than you thought. I want to finish this war, and I can see that such a goal is finally within sight. So I adjusted my tactics accordingly. Marching the main force at such a grueling pace is something that I usually don't do because it wears an army down and costs us a number of men, usually to no purpose. But the end is now in sight, so it is worth the losses. Besides, they are there to serve the cause of the order, not the other way around.
I see, Armina said in a small voice, disheartened to learn yet more of their complete deception and of their helpless plight.
Now we have work.
The three sisters suddenly sprang forward, as if yanked closer by invisible leashes around their necks. Yes, Excellency, they all said as one. Apparently, Jigang had growled a silent order that only they could hear. Probably just to remind them that he was there, in their minds. It occurred to Kaelin that he could control her by the collar around her neck, through his control of the minds of the sisters. But it didn't appear that he was able to control her directly. Besides merely having some basic hatred for her, he also seemed to be trying to paralyze her with fear, as one aspect of controlling her behavior by stopping her from thinking, in addition to using the collar and the sisters. It would seem that while he was somehow within the minds of the sisters, he was not in Kaelin's mind. Of course, she couldn't be sure of that. After all, the sisters had been deluded into thinking the same thing, that the Dreamwalker was not there, in their minds, watching their every thought. So, while she had to assume that it was a possibility, she just didn't think it was true that he was in her mind as well. There was more to it, though. He was treating her in a different way than he treated the sisters. They were treacherous captives. Kaelin was a prize. He had deceived them for a purpose. In essence, he was spying on their thoughts. They were up to things, and he wanted to surreptitiously eavesdrop on those plans so that he could turn them to his own advantage. He knew that Kaelin was not up to anything other than wanting to escape from the sisters. She had no more plans beyond that. She didn't even have a memory of who she really was. There was nothing for Jigang to spy on within her mind. It had to be obvious that she didn't want to be his captive, either, that she wanted her life back. So there was nothing that he really could learn by secretly spying on her thoughts. At least, not yet. Not unless she began to think, rather than be blinded by panic. But if he really wasn't in her mind, then why not? He was a dreamwalker, after all, a man of such power that the sisters had been trying to stay away from him, unsuccessfully, as it turned out, precisely because of his ability and power. He very much wanted Kaelin as his prize of prizes, as he'd called her. If he was in her mind, he could have controlled her with the same invisible leash he used to control the sisters, and not have to go through their ability to do it. He didn't seem like the sort of man who would resort to such a second-hand method of control if he didn't have to. He wouldn't need the sisters to control her if he could enter her mind. What would be the point now of not making his presence in her mind known, if he really could do it? Even more material, if she was that important to him, he would surely want to have that manner of control if it was possible, so why wasn't he able to get into her mind and control her directly? There was something more going on. She got the distinct impression that there were things he was being careful not to say.
"This is it, then," he said to the sisters. "This is the Book of Countered Shadows. This is what you came here for, what you needed. I want you to get started right away."
"But, Excellency," Sister Alicia said, looking startled by the very idea, "we have only two of the boxes.
We would need all three." "No, you don't. You only need to use this book to discover if one of the two boxes we have here is the one you really need. If the missing box is the one that would destroy us, or destroy all that exists, then why would we need it?"
Sister Alicia looked like she had very good reasons why they would need it, but she really didn't want to argue the point. "Well," she said, searching for the right words, "I suppose that very well might be true.
After all, we haven't actually had the chance to study the Book of Counted Shadows yet, so we can't know for sure. The other references could have been wrong. That's why we were coming here, after all. We needed the book. It could be, as you say, Excellency, that we don't actually need the third box. It was obvious to Kalin that Sister Ulysia didn't believe such a thing. Chigang didn't seem concerned by her doubt.
And here it sits, waiting.
He gestured to the book lying on the heavy table.
Once you study this book, then you can tell which box is which. Which one is the one we need? If it turns out that these two are the wrong boxes, perhaps by then the third will turn up.
The sisters hesitated at agreeing to his idea, but didn't seem willing to offer an argument. Finally, after glancing to the others, Sister Ulysia conceded the value of his suggestion. None of us has seen this book before, so we will need to learn from it what we can. I think you are correct, Excellency. Studying the book would be in order.
Jigang tilted his head toward the book lying on the table.
Then get to it.
The sisters crowded close and leaned over, reverently gazing for the first time upon the book they had so long sought. They read in silence, with Jigang keeping an eye on them as well as the book.
Excellency, Sister Ulysia said, after only a brief examination, it would appear that we can't just start, as you put it.
Why not?
Well, look here. She tapped the page. Right in the beginning, this confirms what we previously had reason to suspect, that there are safeguards against any eventuality.
It says that you need...
She fell silent as she glanced over her shoulder at Kalin.
Well, she went on, right here in the very beginning it says, verification of the truth of the Book of Counted Shadows, if spoken by another, rather than read by the one who commands the boxes, can only be ensured by the use of...
Well, Excellency, you can see yourself what it says. It was clear to Kalin that the woman was avoiding saying something aloud.
Chigang likewise read it in silence.
So what? He argued. It is being read by the one who commands the boxes. It's being read by me, through you. I control the boxes now.
Sister Ulysia cleared her throat. Excellency, I want to be perfectly honest with you.
I'm in your mind, Ulysia. It would be impossible for you to be anything but perfectly honest. I know you doubt my idea, but are unwilling to express such thoughts aloud. So, as you know, I would be aware if you were trying to deceive me.
Yes, Excellency. She gestured to the book. But you see, this is a very technical issue.
What is?
The verification issue, Excellency. This is an instructional book on implementation of profoundly complex matters. These things are not only profoundly complex, but profoundly dangerous to all of us. So for that reason, it is critical to pay strict attention to what this book says. This is not a matter to be approached casually. You can't assume anything. The things this book says are exceptionally specific for good reasons. You have to think about every word, every sentence, every formula in it. You have to consider every possibility. Our lives all depend on the utmost caution in these matters.
What's so technical about this? It says quite plainly, verification if spoken by another. It's not spoken by another. We're reading it directly.
That's the precise point, Excellency. We are not reading it directly.
Jigang's face went red with rage.
What do you think we're standing here doing, then?
Sister Ulysia gulped air, as if an invisible hand had her by the throat.
Excellency, you command the boxes, now. But you are not really reading the Book of Counted Shadows.
He leaned toward her in a menacing fashion.
Then what is it I'm reading?
A copy, she said. He paused.
So?
So, in this case, you are not technically reading the Book of Counted Shadows. You are reading a copy of it. You are, in essence, reading something spoken by another.
His frown deepened.
Who is the one reading it, then?
The one who made the copy.
Jigang straightened as comprehension dawned in his expression.
Yes.
This isn't the original. In a sense, I'm hearing it from the one who made the copy.
He scratched his stubble.
So it must be verified.
Exactly, Excellency, said Sister Ulysia, visibly relieved. Jagang looked back over his shoulder at Kalin.
Come here.
Kalin hurried to do as he ordered, not wanting to be given any pain in a fight she knew he would easily win. Jillian stuck close to her side, apparently not wanting to be left standing alone back closer to the two fierce guards. Jagang's big hand grasped the back of Kalin's neck. He forcibly pulled her forward and bent her down toward the book.
Look at this and tell me if it's genuine.
After he released her, Kalin could still feel the painful, lingering impression of his powerful fingers where they had squeezed her neck. She resisted the urge to rub her throbbing flesh, and instead picked up the book. Kalin didn't have the slightest idea how to tell if a book that she had never seen before was genuine or not. She didn't have any idea what would constitute authenticity. She knew, though, that Jagang would not accept such an excuse. He only cared about getting an answer. He wouldn't want to hear that she didn't know that answer. Deciding that she at least had to try, she began leafing through the pages, trying to make it look like she was putting in an honest effort when she was really doing nothing more than flipping over blank pages of a book lying open on the table before her. "I'm sorry," she said at last, unable to think of anything to tell him other than the truth. "But this is all blank. There is nothing for me to verify."
"She can't see the words, Excellency,"
Sister Ulysia said under her breath, as if it were hardly a surprise to her.
"This is a book of magic. An intact link to specific kinds of Han is required to read it."
Jagang glanced at the collar around Kalin's neck.
"Intact."
He peered suspiciously into her eyes.
"Maybe she's lying. Maybe she just doesn't want to tell us what she sees."
Kalin wondered if this was confirmation that he was not in her mind, or if for some reason he was still carrying out a carefully crafted ruse. It didn't seem to her that at this point such reticence to reveal a presence in her mind, if there really was one, would serve any purpose. After all, the boxes and the book were the central reason for the entire deception of the sisters. He had used his secret presence specifically to bring them here, to this book. Jagang abruptly snatched Jillian by her hair. Jillian let out a surprised but brief, clipped cry. He was obviously hurting her. She did her best not to pull against the hand holding her hair, lest he rip her scalp off.
"I'm going to gouge out one of this girl's eyes," Jagang told Kalin. "I will then ask again if the book is genuine or not. If I don't get an answer, for whatever reason, then I will gouge out her other eye. I will ask one last time, and if you again don't give me the answer, then I will gouge out her heart. What do you have to say about that?"
The sisters stood mute as they watched, making no move to interfere. Jagang pulled a knife from a sheath at his belt. Jillian began panting in terror as he jerked her around, drawing his arm up tight across her throat, holding her against his chest to render her helpless and keep her still as he brought the point of the knife perilously close to her face.
"Let me see the book," Kalin said, hoping to avert the irrevocable.
With a thumb and a free finger of the hand holding the knife, he picked up the book and handed it to her. Kalin thumbed through the pages more carefully, making sure she wasn't missing any page that might say anything at all, but she still saw nothing. Every single page was blank. There was nothing to see, no way to tell if it was real or not. She closed the cover and smoothed the flat of her hand over it. She didn't know what to do. She had no idea what to look for. She flipped the book over, checking the back cover. She looked at the deckle edges of the pages. She turned the book, looking down at the title embossed in gold letters on the spine. Jillian let out a strangled cry as Jagang tightened his grip across her throat, lifting her feet clear of the ground. He brought the point of the knife right up to the girl's right eye. She blinked, unable to turn away from the threat,
her lashes brushing the blade's point.
"Time to go blind," Jagang growled.
"It's fake," Kaelin said. He looked up.
"What?"
Kaelin held the book out to him. "This book is a false copy. It's fake." Sister Ulysia took a step forward. "How can you possibly know that?" She looked clearly confused that Kaelin could pronounce the book a fraud without being able to read a single word in it. Kaelin ignored her. Instead, she continued to look into the dreamwalker's nightmare eyes. Cloudy shapes shifted like angry thunderstorms on a midnight horizon. It took all of her willpower not to look away.
"Are you sure?" Jagang asked.
"Yes," she said with all the confidence she could muster.
"It's a fake."
Now acutely focused on Kaelin, Jagang released Jillian. Once free, the girl fled around behind Kaelin, using her for cover. Jagang watched Kaelin's eyes.
"How do you know that it's not the Book of Counted Shadows?"
Kaelin, still holding the book out to him, turned it so that he could see the spine. "You are all looking for the Book of Counted Shadows. This says, the Book of Counted Shadow." His glare heated.
"What?"
"You asked how I know it's not genuine. That's how. It says shadow, not shadows. It's a fake." Sister Cecilia wearily wiped a hand across her face. Sister Armina rolled her eyes. Sister Ulysia, though, frowned at the book, reading the spine for herself.
"She's right." "So what?" Jagang threw up his hands. "So the word shadow is missing a letter. It's shadow, singular, instead of plural. So what?"
"Simple," Kaelin said. "One is real, one is not."
"Simple?" he asked. "You think it's that simple?"
"How much more simple can it get?"
"It probably means nothing," Sister Cecilia said, eager to side with her ill-tempered master. "Singular, plural, what difference could it make? It's just the cover. It's what's inside that counts."
"It could just be a mistake," Jagang said. "Maybe the person who bound the copy made a mistake. The book would likely have been bound by someone else, so the book itself is no doubt fine."
"That's right," Sister Armina said, wanting to join in with the Emperor as well. "The person who made the binding is the one who made the error, not the one who made the copy. It's highly unlikely that they would be the same person. The binder was probably an incompetent oaf. The one writing the words in the book would have had to be gifted. Those words written inside the book are what matters. That's the information that must be true, not what it's wrapped in. There is no doubt that it's a simple error made by a binding artisan, and it means nothing." "We brought her here for this reason," Sister Ulysia reminded them under her breath. "It is irrelevant how simple it might appear. The book itself, before anything else, cautions that in this very circumstance it must be verified by her. This is a highly dangerous matter. Such an answer is too simple," Sister Cecilia proclaimed. Sister Ulysia cocked her head at the woman. "And if an assassin is coming at you with a knife, is that blade too simple for you to believe it a danger?" Sister Cecilia did not look amused. "This matter is too complex to be decided by something so simple."
"Oh?"
Sister Ulysia leveled a condescending glare at the woman. "And where does it say that the verification must be complex? It says only that she must make it. None of us noticed the error. She did. She has satisfied the instruction." Sister Cecilia looked down her nose at the woman who used to be her leader, but was no more. Now Sister Ulysia was no longer the one in charge, no longer the one they had to please.
"I don't think it means anything," Jagang said, still staring into Kaelin's unflinching eyes. "I doubt that she really knows that this is a fake. She's just trying to save her own neck."
Kaelin shrugged. "If that's what you want to think, fine. But maybe there is an absence of doubt in your mind because you want to believe that this copy is real." She lifted an eyebrow. "Not because it is." Jagang stared at her a moment. He suddenly snatched the book out of her hands and turned back to the sisters.
We need to take a careful look at what's inside. That's what matters in finding and opening the right box. We need to make sure it's not flawed in any way.
Excellency, Sister Alicia began, there may be no way to tell if something written in here is...
Jagang tossed the book on the table, cutting her off. I want you three to go over everything in this book. See if you can find any reason at all to think that this might be a fake.
Sister Alicia cleared her throat. Well, we can try.
No!
His booming voice echoed around the room.
Or would you rather go to the tents and entertain my men? The choice of service is up to you. Pick one.
The three sisters jumped to the table. They all leaned in as they began studying the book. Jagang pushed between Sisters Alicia and Cecilia, apparently to watch over what they were reading, and make sure that they were not overlooking anything.
Chapter 39. Once she was sure that the four of them were busy, Kaelin quietly ushered Jillian back to the far end of the room, off to the side of the two big guards. I want you to listen to me very carefully and do exactly as I say, Kaelin told her in a low voice that Jagang and the sisters couldn't hear. Jillian frowned up at her, waiting. I need to be sure of something. I'm going to walk over to those two guards.
What?
Kaelin pressed her hand over the girl's mouth.
Shh!
Jillian glanced to their captors, worried now that she had caught their attention. She hadn't. Satisfied that she had made her point, Kaelin took her hand away. I've come to suspect that I've been spelled by those three sorceresses. I think that's why I don't remember who I am. It's magic of some sort. Almost no one but them and Jagang can ever remember seeing me. Almost no one does. I have no idea why you can. They also put this collar around my neck, and they can use it to hurt me. Now, I don't think the guards can see me, but I need to find out for sure. I want you to stay right here. Don't watch me, or you will make them suspicious of you. But... Kaelin crossed her lips with a finger. Listen to me. Do as I ask. Jillian finally nodded her agreement. Without waiting to see if the girl would change her mind and decide to argue, Kaelin again checked to make sure that Jagang and the sisters were busy reading. Once seeing that they were, she immediately started across the floor. She moved as silently as she could. The guards may not know she was there, but if Jagang or the sisters heard her, she would lose her chance before she could begin. The two guards stared ahead, watching their emperor. Occasionally, the one closest to Jillian would glance over at the girl. Kaelin could tell by his lingering gaze what he was thinking. He was hoping that Jagang would give Jillian to him. Kaelin imagined that with a man like Jagang, such occasional rewards were a benefit of having earned such a trusted position as personal guard to an emperor. Jillian had no idea of the fate that was in store for her. Kaelin had to do something to change the headlong course of those looming events. Once in front of the guards, she was careful to stay out of the line of sight between them and the four people at the table. She also had to be careful not to draw the attention of the sisters or Jagang, either. Even if the two guards couldn't remember Kaelin long enough to be aware that she was there, she didn't want to find out what would happen if they were mysteriously blocked from seeing their leader. These two were wary men, no doubt of exceptional talents, and there was no telling how small a thing could alert them to trouble, and Kaelin intended on being a great deal of trouble, but not until she was ready. Standing directly in front of the two huge men, she realized that she only came up to the tops of their shoulders, so she wouldn't likely block their view. They didn't look at her, or in any way acknowledge her presence. She gently touched the metal post through one man's nose. He wrinkled his nose and casually reached up and scratched, but he did not grab her hand. Satisfied that he would do no more, Kaelin reached out and smoothly drew a knife from a sheath on the leather strap crossing the man's chest. As the blade came out into the torchlight, she was very careful to draw it evenly, without putting any twisting pressure on the sheath or strap. He didn't notice anything as it came completely free. It felt good to have the weapon in her hand. The emotion of it caused her to remember being back at the White Horse Inn, where the sisters had killed the husband and wife who had run the place.
She remembered picking up a heavy cleaver to try to stop them from harming the daughter. She remembered the deep inner satisfaction of having a weapon in her hand, because it represented a sense of having the means to control her own life, to help her to survive. A weapon meant not being at the mercy of evil people who respected no law, whether of man or reason, of not being a helpless prey of those who were stronger and would use that strength to dominate others. Kaelin twirled the knife across her hand, weaving it through her fingers, watching it reflect the flickering light from the torches as it spun. She caught the handle, and for a moment stared at the well-honed, polished blade. It represented salvation. If not for her, at least for Jillian. Remembering where she was and what she was doing, Kaelin quickly slipped the weapon down inside her boot. She looked over to make sure that Jillian was quiet and staying put. The girl's eyes had gone wide. Kaelin turned back to her task and carefully drew a second knife from a sheath on the other guard's chest strap. The blade was a little thinner, the weapon a little better balanced. Like the first, she pierced the blade through the leather of her boot, near the top, and slid it down into her boot, being careful to position it as she did, so that the blade would be behind the bone of her ankle. She then pushed the point securely into the bottom of the boot. In the makeshift sheath, the knife couldn't move around and cut her when she walked. As silently as possible, walking lightly on the balls of her feet, Kaelin quickly returned to a startled Jillian. The sisters and their master were involved in an animated conversation about the relevance of star positions, the influence of weather, and the time of year on the formation and concentration of power needed for specific spells. The sisters were explaining the meaning of passages, and Jigang was asking questions every few minutes, challenging their assumptions at every turn. Kaelin was a bit surprised to hear how well-versed the man was. The sisters sometimes found that he had learned more than they knew on certain subjects to do with the Boxes of Warden. Jigang didn't look like a man who would be the kind to value knowledge from books, but Kaelin was wrong. While she didn't understand most of what they were talking about, it was obvious that Jigang was well-read and more than up to the task of conversing intelligently with the sisters, especially about subjects that they said were found only in the rarest of books. He wasn't just a brute. He was worse than that. He was a very smart brute. "All right," Kaelin said in a voice low enough that she was sure the others couldn't hear her. "I want you to listen to me. We may not have much time." Jillian's eyes were still wide. "How did you do that?" "I was right. They can't see me." "And twirling the knife like you did?" Kaelin shrugged, dismissing a question she couldn't answer to address more important matters. "Look, I need to get you out of here. This may be our only chance." Jillian looked horrified at the notion. "But if I escape, he will kill my grandfather, and probably the others as well. I can't leave." "That is the power he holds over you. But if you don't get away, the truth is that you all very well may be killed anyway. You need to understand that this could be the only chance you have, or will ever have, for your freedom." "Are you really sure of that? How can I risk my grandfather's life on what you think might happen?" Kaelin took a deep breath. She hadn't wanted to have to explain it. "I don't have time to put it to you nicely, to persuade you in gentle ways. I only have time to give you the bare bones of the truth, so that's what I'm going to do, so listen carefully. I know what these men are like. I've seen what they do to young women like you and me, seen it with my own eyes. I've seen their naked, broken bodies left sprawled where they lay when Imperial Order soldiers are finished using them, or dumped in ditches like refuse. If you don't get away, very bad things are going to happen to you, at best. You will spend the rest of your short life as a slave, being used by soldiers for their sick pleasure and amusement in ways you don't want to learn about. You will spend the rest of your life alternating between terror and sobbing. That's at best. You will live, but wish every moment that you were dead. At worst, you are going to be killed when Jigang leaves. Either way, it's a fool's wish to think he's going to let you go. No matter what happens, whether you escape or stay, he might let your grandfather and the others go simply because they may not want to take the time and trouble to kill them. Jigang has more important things he's interested in. But you are plunder that has value to him. If nothing else, he will give you to those two guards as a bonus for their service. That's how men such as Jagang draw ruthless brutes like those two into loyal service, by giving them tasty little scraps like you. Do you have any idea what they will do with you before they cut your throat? Do you?
Jillian was silent for a moment. She swallowed before speaking. I know what Jagang meant before, when he asked if I've ever been with a man, but I pretended I didn't. I know what he meant when he said that he would give me over to his soldiers. I know what he meant when he said they would like getting their hands on a young woman like me. I know what he meant about their desires. My family has warned me about the dangers from strangers like these. My mother has explained it. I think that she did not tell me everything, though, so that I wouldn't have nightmares. I think the parts you know would give me nightmares. Before, I only pretended I didn't know what Jagang was talking about so that he wouldn't know how afraid I was of him doing that to me.
Kaelin couldn't help smiling. That was a very wise thing you did, keeping such knowledge to yourself.
Jillian twisted her mouth, fighting back tears at the grim fate she had just admitted understanding.
You have a plan?
Yes. You have long legs, but I still doubt that you can outrun them. There's another way, though, a way that uses what you know and they don't. You said that one wrong turn out there, and people get lost in the maze of tunnels and rooms. If you get even a small head start, you will be able to quickly lose them in all the twists and turns. As complex as this place is, I don't think that even the powers of the sisters would help them get you, and I don't think that Jagang would waste the time trying.
She still looked dubious. But I... Jillian, this is a chance for you to escape. Another may never come along. I don't want anything terrible to happen to you. If you stay, it will. I want you to understand that you must take this chance. I want you out of here. This is all I can do for you.
Jillian was overcome with a look of horror.
You mean... you're not going with me?
Kaelin pressed her lips tight and shook her head. She tapped the metal collar around her neck.
They can stop me with this. It's magic of some sort. They will be able to put me down. But I think that before they do, I'll be able to help slow them enough so that you can get away.
But they will hurt you, or even kill you for helping me get away.
They are going to hurt me anyway. Jagang has already promised me the worst he can dream up.
He can do no more than he already intends. As for killing me, I don't think they would do that, for now at least. They still need me.
I'm helping you get away, and that's all there is to it. My mind is made up. It's my choice. It's the only thing I can do, the only thing that I have a choice about. If I help you, then it makes my own life, no matter what will become of me, mean more to me. I will at least have done something to fight back. I will at least have this victory over them.
Jillian stared at her. You're as brave as Lord Rawl.
Kaelin's eyebrows lifted.
You mean Richard Rawl?
You know Richard Rawl?
Jillian nodded.
He helped me too.
Kaelin shook her head in wonder.
For living out here in the middle of nowhere, you sure seem to have met a lot of important people. What was he doing here?
He came back from the dead.
Kaelin frowned.
What? Well, not exactly the dead, really. At least that's what he told me. But he came up from the Well of the Dead in the graveyard, just as the telling said he would. I am the Priestess of the Bones. I am his servant, a dreamcaster. He is my master. There have been many Priestesses of the Bones before me, but he never came for them. I never knew that it would turn out that he would come back in my lifetime. He came to find books, too. He is the one who found this place. I never even knew it was down here. None of my people knew. Even my grandfather never knew this place of bones was here. Richard was looking for a book to help him find someone important to him. The book was called Chainfire. Once he discovered this place and brought me down here, I'm the one who found the book for him. He was really excited. I was so happy that I was the one who helped him find what he needed. Since coming down here with him, I've spent all my time exploring this place, learning every turn and tunnel and room. I hope Richard will return one day, as he said he might, and then I will be able to show him everything. I very much want to make him proud of me. Kaelin could see the longing in Jillian's eyes to satisfy the man, to do something he would value, to have him recognize her effort and ability. Kaelin wanted to ask 1,000 questions.
but she didn't have the time. She couldn't resist one, though. What's he like? Master Rawl saved my life. I've never met anyone else like him. Jillian smiled in a distant way. He was, well, I don't know. She sighed, unable to find the words. I see, Kaelin said at the dreamy look in the girl's copper-colored eyes. He saved my life from soldiers sent by Jagang before. They were looking for these books. I was so afraid the man who had me was going to cut my throat, but Richard killed him. Then he held me in his arms and quieted my tears. She looked up from gazing into her memories. And he saved my grandfather, too. Well, not exactly him, but the woman with him. Woman? Jillian nodded. Nikki. She said that she was a sorceress. She was so beautiful. I couldn't stop staring at her. I'd never before seen a woman that beautiful. She was like a good spirit standing there before me, with hair like sunlight and eyes like the sky itself. Kaelin sighed. Why wouldn't a man like that have a beautiful woman with him? After hearing it, she didn't know why she hadn't ever considered such a likelihood before now. Kaelin didn't know why, but she felt as if something, some hope she had never dared define, or maybe an unfathomable longing she still clung to, for something profoundly valuable hidden beneath the black shroud that had been drawn over her past, had just slipped away from her. She had to look away from Jillian's gaze, lest she lose control at the thought of the forlorn situation she found herself trapped in. She used the excuse of looking over her shoulder, checking to make sure that the Emperor and his sisters were still busy, as she wiped an unexpected solitary tear from her cheek. The sisters looked more involved than ever in a discussion of the technicalities in the book. Jagang was demanding to know how they could be sure that certain parts were correct. When Kaelin looked back, Jillian was staring at her. "But she wasn't as beautiful as you." Kaelin smiled. "Diplomacy must be a requirement of being a priestess of the bones." "No," Jillian said, looking suddenly worried that Kaelin might not believe she was telling the truth. "Really? There's something about you." Kaelin frowned. "What do you mean?" Jillian's nose scrunched up with a struggle of searching for words. "I don't know how to explain it. You're beautiful and smart, and you know the right thing to do. But there's something else." Kaelin wondered if this could be some link to who she really was. She had been looking for someone who would be able to see her, and remember her, and maybe give her a clue. "Like what?" "I don't know. Something noble." "Noble?" Jillian nodded. "You remind me of Lord Rawl in a way. He saved my life without hesitation, just like you want to do. It wasn't just that, though. I don't know how to explain it. There was just something about him. And you have that same quality about you, too." "Good. At least he and I have something in common, then, because I'm about to save your life, too." Kaelin took a steadying breath as she checked over her shoulder again. The others were still engaged in their heated conversation. She turned back to Jillian and gave her a dead serious look. "We have to do this now." "But I'm still worried about my grandfather." Kaelin looked into the girl's eyes for a long moment. "Now you listen to me, Jillian. You're fighting for your life. It's the only life you will ever have. They will show you no mercy for staying. I know that your grandfather would want you to take this chance." Jillian nodded. "I understand. Lord Rawl told me much the same thing about the importance of my life." For some reason, that lifted Kaelin's heart and made her smile. The smile quickly vanished, though, as she put her mind back to the task at hand. She didn't know if Jagang and the sisters would be finished soon, or if they would be at it for the rest of the night, but she couldn't afford to miss the opportunity. "We have to do this now, before I lose my nerve. I want you to do exactly as I say." "I will," Jillian said. "Here's what we're going to do. You will stay right here. I'm going to go over there and kill these two men." Jillian's eyes went wide. "You're going to do what?" "Kill them." "How? You're just a woman. And they're big. And there's two of them."
It's not impossible if you know how.
You're going to cut their throats? Gillian guessed.
No. They would make noise if I did that. Besides, I couldn't do that to both of them at the same time. So, I'm going to take two more of their knives, and then I'm going to slip up behind them, and I'm going to stab them right here.
Kaelin jabbed a finger in Gillian's back, a little to the side, right in the soft spot of her kidney. Even the small jab made the girl grunt with the pain of how sensitive that place was. Stabbing a man right there, in his kidney, is so painful that it makes it impossible for him to cry out.
You can't be serious.
Surely they will scream. Kaelin shook her head. The pain is so great when you're stabbed in the kidney that your throat clamps shut. Your scream is locked in your lungs. That will be our chance. Before they collapse and hit the floor as they're dying, we have to get through that door behind them. We have to slip through it as quietly as possible to buy as much time as we can. We'll probably only have a brief moment before we're discovered, but that moment is all we need for you to get away. You stand right here. As soon as I drive the knives in their backs, you head for the door, fast as you can, but don't make any noise. I'll be there with you at the doors.
Gillian was panting in fear of such a task. Her eyes were brimming with tears. But I want you to go with me.
Kaelin squatted down and hugged the girl. I know. This is all I can do to protect you, Gillian. But I think it will be enough to get away.
She wiped at her eyes.
But what will they do to you?
You just worry about getting away. If I get a chance to escape, I promise you I will. Tell Loki to watch for me in case I ever do get away.
All right. Kaelin knew that it was a false hope. She squeezed Gillian's shoulder and stood. She checked the four at the table one last time. She did so just in time. Jigang glanced over his shoulder to see what Kaelin was doing. She stood silently beside Gillian, watching him and the sisters working, as if she had been there the whole time, doing nothing but awaiting her fate. He turned his attention to a heated discussion between Sister Ulysia and Sister Cecilia. Sister Ulysia was being her obstinate self, while Sister Cecilia was trying to find a way to appease Jigang by telling him whatever he wanted to hear. Once she was sure that Jigang's attention was back on the book, Kaelin immediately started for the guards. As one was again eyeing Gillian with increasingly open lust, Kaelin carefully pulled a long knife from his weapons belt. Without delay, she moved to the far guard and did the same, taking his long knife as well. Standing behind them, she glanced to the sisters and Jigang, and seeing them still busy, she looked over at Gillian. The girl, wiping her palms on her hips, nodded that she was ready. Kaelin reached to the man on the right and drew a knife he carried in a sheath hanging from a strap on her side. She placed the blade sideways between her teeth. Without lingering any longer, she scrutinized the lower backs of the guards, selecting the precise spot she needed to hit. She chose the right side of the man on her left and the left side of the man on her right, so that she would have targets closest together, and she would be able to put her full strength into the thrust. She looked back and forth between the men, making sure that she would hit the right spot with each knife. If she missed, it would be fatal, but not necessarily for the men. It would be Gillian who paid the price of an error. It had to be right, and it had to be right the first time. Kaelin took a deep breath, holding it only briefly. Then she exhaled hard, adding that power to the force she put into her thrust. With all her strength, she plunged both knives into the men's backs. The blades went in up to the hilts. Both men stiffened at the jolting shock. Kaelin had already drawn another breath. This time, as quickly as she could, she forced out the breath and used all her considerable strength to pull the handles together toward one another so that the blades would pivot and rip through the men's kidneys. The men stood frozen stiff and slightly twisted, backs arched with the intense wallop of excruciating pain. Their eyes bulged, mouths opened, but they made no sound. They stood in mortal trauma, unable to draw in a gasp or let out a cry. When Kaelin looked up, Gillian was already on her way. Kaelin turned and swiftly opened one of the narrow doors.
She didn't want to give their pursuers a clear path by opening both. Jillian was there. The men's knees began buckling. Kaelin put her hand on Jillian's back, between her shoulders, and pushed her through the doorway, propelling her out into the hallway. Kaelin took the knife from her teeth. "Run! Don't stop for anything!" Jillian nodded back. She looked as if the Keeper himself were on her heels. Kaelin turned to close the door, but just then the men hit the floor. Four startled faces spun around toward her. Kaelin pulled the door closed and ran as if the Keeper were after her, too. She saw Jillian in the dim distance, just as she reached an intersection where a juncture of branches of passages went off in different directions. The girl paused, looking back at Kaelin. They shared a brief look filled with meaning, and then she was gone, vanished down one of the passages. It was so dark in the distance that Kaelin wasn't sure which one Jillian had taken. Behind came an explosive splintering of wood, as if the doors had been blown apart. Torchlight suddenly spilled through the hall, surrounding Kaelin. She immediately stopped and spun back. She gripped the knife by the point. She saw shadows in the room rushing toward the gaping doorway. With all her strength, she heaved the knife without there even being anyone there yet in that doorway. An enraged Sister Cecilia burst through first. The knife slammed into her chest. Kaelin had hoped it would have been Jagang, first through, but she had been pretty sure it would be a sister, so she had aimed accordingly. The blade had flown true and plunged right through Sister Cecilia's heart. The sister went down hard. Kaelin turned and ran with all her strength. Just as she had turned, she saw the others fall over the body of Sister Cecilia. Kaelin ran like she had never run before. She took the first corner to the left. She didn't know which turns Jillian had taken, but she didn't see her. The girl was gone. A flush of pure exhilaration washed through Kaelin, filling her very soul with the thrill of success. It had worked. She had kept her promise to Jillian, and to herself. She had at least beaten them in this much of it. She was giddy with the victory, even as she ran like a madwoman. She had not only killed the two guards, but she had taken out Sister Cecilia. Images of the pain that woman had given her, and the satisfaction she had derived from it, flashed through Kaelin's mind, and she savored her vengeance. Now that it had worked, and Jillian was away, terror flooded up through her. She knew she wouldn't get away. All she could do was run, taking random turns, and wait for the end. It came with a sudden shock of pain she thought must have been something like the two men had felt. She knew she hit the ground, but she didn't really feel it. And then it felt as if the entire ceiling and dead city above all caved in on top of her. The world went as black as a grave. Chapter 40. Richard was winded by the time he had finally crested the rise. It wasn't just that he was out of breath, though. He was also out of strength as well. He knew that he hadn't taken the time to eat as much as he should have along the way, and now he was paying the price for it. His legs felt like lead. His stomach ached with hunger. He felt weak and just wanted to lie down, but he couldn't. Not now. Not when he was this close. Not when there was so much at stake. He'd eaten some pine nuts and a few handfuls of huckleberries he'd come across as he went along, but he hadn't gone out of his way to collect any more. He just hadn't wanted to take the time. At least he had his pack with him, so the night before he had been able to set out a fishing line in a small lake just at sunset. He then collected an armload of dry wood and started a fire with a flint and steel. By the time the fire was hot, he had 3 trout on his set line. He had been so hungry that he'd been tempted to eat them raw, but fish cooked quickly, so he waited. Not wanting to stop any longer than necessary, he'd gotten little sleep on the short journey from the Slough. He reasoned that the sooner he got his hands on the book that Barakas had left for him, the better off he would be. The book had already been waiting there for him for 3,000 years. He didn't want it to wait another night. He thought about how if he had been smart enough to find the book sooner, he might have avoided the problems he now faced. He was hoping that it could somehow help him in finding Kaelin. Maybe even help him find a way to reverse the tainted chainfire spell. He'd reasoned that the best plan would be to recover the book as soon as possible, and then he could do some reading while he took the time to eat. He would worry then about sleeping and getting back to the keep. The keep was a long way off. He didn't know exactly where he was, except that he was a good distance south of Agadon Reach, in what appeared to be an uninhabited area either near or in the wilds. So he was concerned about how he was going to find some horses. One problem at a time, he reminded himself, one problem at a time. As difficult as it had been to undertake the climb up the steep, rocky rise in the dark, he couldn't bring himself to stop when he knew that he was close. Besides, if he wanted to see the night wisps, it could only be at night, so he didn't want to wait until morning to make the climb and then have to wait around all the next day for it to get dark again. Finally reaching the top, Richard scanned the area to get his bearings. Above the edge of the steep slope, the ground leveled off into a sparsely wooded oak grove. The breeze from earlier in the day had died hours ago at sunset, and it was now dead calm. The silence felt like an oppressive weight lying over him. For some reason, the typical night sounds of small animals, insects, and such that were common in the lowlands stretching out endlessly behind him were silent up at the top of the long climb. In the moonlight, Richard immediately noticed that there was something wrong with the trees. It looked as if they were all dead. The fat, squat trunks were twisted and gnarled. The bark had started to come away in ragged strips. The bent and distorted branches looked like claws reaching out to snatch anyone who dared enter the place. Richard had been focused at the trek and the climb, but he suddenly switched to being on guard, his attention riveted as he listened for any sound in the eerie silence. He moved carefully beneath the trees, trying to make as little noise as possible. It was difficult, though, since the ground was littered with dry sticks and leaves. The branches looming overhead cast grotesque shadows in the moonlight, and the air had a chill to it that ran a shiver up his back. With the next step, something underfoot broke with an odd, bony pop. In all the years he'd spent in the woods, Richard had never heard a sound like that before. He froze in place, listening, waiting. His mind raced as he went over the memory of the sound, trying to come up with its cause. Try as he might, he couldn't place it. When he heard nothing more, and saw nothing move, he carefully backed up, lifting his foot off whatever it was that had broken. After checking in every direction, appraising every shadow, he squatted down to see what it was that he had stepped on. Whatever it was covered in leaves. He cautiously pushed the decaying leaves aside. There, half buried in the forest loam, dark with age, was a broken human skull staring up at him. The weight of his foot had broken in the rounded top of the skull. The eye sockets, that seemed to be watching him, were still intact. Richard scanned the forest floor and saw other humps under the leaves. He also saw something else, more skulls that weren't buried beneath the forest litter. Just from where he crouched, he could see a good half-dozen skulls lying at least partially atop leaves, and even more rounded shapes below them. Beneath the leaves, he found the rest of the bones that belonged to the skull he had stepped on.
This is the end of disc number 14. Please continue listening on disc number 15.